Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. It is one of the greatest ironies of modern life. The more we optimize, the less things seem to truly improve. We shrink a problem only to enlarge it again. We streamline processes only to add new layers of complexity. We invent more efficient machines only to use them more intensively. We build devices that take work off our shoulders only to fill the freed up time with even more work. And so, a paradox emerges, quietly woven through the history of technology, economies, and the entire human progress. A paradox that reveals how difficult it is for us to deal with our own gains. Humans strive for improvement, but we are not beings of reduction. As soon as something becomes cheaper, faster, easier, a part of us immediately demands more of that. Efficiency creates free space, and we will fill it. It offers possibilities, and we overuse them. It promises relief, and we turn it into additional burden. This is how the rebound effect emerges. A mirror showing us that technological progress does not automatically lead to less consumption, but often merely sets the stage for more speed, more comfort, more demand. A mirror that forces us to ask, are we truly improving the world or simply optimizing the conditions to exploit it even faster? In this episode of the Human Technology Podcast, I will think and talk a bit about the rebound effect. And 3 points. First, there's a definition. So what is it? And a couple of examples connected to that. In the second part, I will analyze the mechanism behind the rebound effect. Where does it come from and why is it so strong? I can tell you there are 3 main mechanisms behind that that are not really independent, but woven into each other that make it even faster and even more clearer, even more obvious, makes it stronger. And the last point, I will have a quick look at what all this has to do with UX, user experience, HMI, human machine interfaces, user interfaces, human factors, the automotive world, the entire world I'm living and working in. Right, let's get started. So what is the rebound effect? The rebound effect describes the phenomenon in which improvements in efficiency do not lead to lower overall consumption, but often flip into the opposite. The originally achieved efficiency is lost because the saved resource, maybe energy, maybe money, maybe time, maybe attention, is consumed again through increased usage. Central example is the 3 liters cars of the 1990s. So the idea was that a car is produced that consumes less than 3 liters of gasoline on 100 kilometers drive. Don't ask me for the American version. I should have looked it up before recording this podcast. But it is it's about half of what a compact class car of today is using. That was intended as a symbol of fuel efficient driving, and it disappeared. It never became reality. It never hit the roads. And that's not because the technology failed, but because our consumption behavior did. While engines became more efficient, cars became bigger, heavier, and more powerful. Today, our garages are filled with massive SUVs equipped with advanced technology, but they consume just a little less than cars from 30 or 40 years ago. And in the end, a so-called improvement turned into no improvement at all. And the same goes for energy-saving light bulbs, smart home appliances, digital tools. Now, it always shows the same pattern. Efficiency increases, but so do usage, consumption, expectations, and therefore the total load. We do not make any gain with the car technology that increases efficiency. And here are 3 examples, and one is, I have already teased, the mobility and the automotive industry. And there are only a few areas that illustrate the rebound effect as clearly as the automotive world. Engineers have spent decades improving engines, gasoline engines, reducing vehicle weight, developing smarter drivetrains. And yes, modern engines are far more fuel efficient and cleaner than those of the 1980s and 1990s. Yet these gains vanish behind a counter trend. Vehicles are becoming larger, wider, heavier, and more powerful. SUVs dominate the market, even though physics dictates that they consume more energy. And features like advanced driver assistance systems, comfort seating, panoramic roofs, large batteries, all-wheel drives increase the vehicle mass by hundreds of kilos. And this is not necessarily a bad thing. Airbags, crash structures, more stiff rear ends and front ends of cars, they increase safety, so we have a benefit from that. But we work against the effect we make with the fuel reduction that is possible with modern engines. This is the rebound effect. Hey, efficiency gains and therefore every efficiency gained is completely eaten up and very often overcompensated. A car that in Europe took a 5-person family on vacations on holidays 40 years ago, a very small car, would be considered far too small today for even an inner city commute. So if we have a look at the European cars out of the 60s and 70s, very small cars. The Volkswagen Beetle is one example. The first Golf, then called Rabbit. If you have a look at them today, 40, 50, 60 years later, they seem super small. But I remember driving with my parents' Beetle 10 hours on a vacation trip. And we did not complain. It was absolutely okay at that time. Today, it's a nice old timer, and it's beautiful to drive on Sunday afternoons. That's definitely not something we use for everyday driving. So our desire for luxury and safety grows is faster than any technical innovation meant to deliver efficiency. So the result is cars technically consume less, but practically they don't. That is the perfect example of the rebound effect. Second example out of the energy and household area. Household appliances, lighting, heating systems are more efficient than ever. LED light bulbs use a fraction of the energy than an old traditional light bulb did. Refrigerators are efficiency wonders. Smart thermostats control heating with millimetric precision. Now what do? We illuminate larger living spaces. We leave the lights on longer because it hardly costs anything. We own more kitchen devices than ever, from sous vide cookers to air fryers to toasters to microwave ovens. The number of kitchen devices is constantly growing. And we do not heat our homes less, but more comfortably. We have warmer bathrooms, longer heating periods. We have zoned climate control. Yep, all that is there. And the example, one of the traditional examples out of that area is the traditional wood stoves. Yeah, that is something like 100-150 years ago, and that is exactly the same phenomenon. This the technology of modern, then time modern wood ovens reduced the consumption of wood per cooking process. But people cooked more and more elaborately, so the total wood consumption stayed the same. So the rebound effect seems to be very constant over time. Energy is not invested in savings, but in more usage. The possibility to save resources becomes the possibility to increase comfort. And this is exactly what we do. The third example is out of the digital world, the work world. So we are more efficient, we are faster, but hardly anyone returns home earlier. Digitalization gave us tools that would have seemed magic 20, 30, 40 years ago. We can automate tasks, we can shorten communication paths, we can accelerate decisions, we can access information instantly, and we can manage multiple projects in parallel. I remember when I got my first email address ever. That was when I did my PhD at the Technical University in Berlin, and that was my 30th birthday. And on that day, on March 15, 1994, I received my first email address, and suddenly I did not need to write paper letters anymore. Yeah, typing that on a computer, then printing them out, going to the printer, putting them into an envelope, putting it in the post out box at the university, and then three days later, it may appear on the desk of somebody else. And from that moment on, when I got my first email address, I could write a message that was around the globe within seconds. Yeah, much faster, much more efficient. But the workplace has not become more relaxed. It has become more compressed. And every time saving is interpreted as a capacity gain. Now, if you finish a task in 1 hour instead of three, you get more tasks and not more free time. Digital communication makes us constantly reachable, creating more messages, more meetings, more decisions. Accelerated processes are increasing expectations. They don't calm it down. What can be done in minutes is now expected in minutes. And instead of maybe two projects, we have in the old times, we managed 10 because the tools support us. So we optimize and we automate, but we never get home earlier. The rebound effect is almost harsher than in technology and energy here in this case. Instead of real relief, digitalization creates density, psychological and cognitive load. So we have the paradox: we work more efficiently, but not less. We work faster, but not more calmly. And we work smarter, but not wiser. Second part, where does it come from? What are the three main mechanisms that we see? Why does it happen? The mechanisms behind the rebound effect. The rebound effect is not an accident. It's an inherent property of human behavior. It's part of us in economic structures and technological development. So we have three layers here, and they reinforce each other. The psychological layer, the economic layer, and the technological area. Let's start with the psychological mechanisms behind it. So efficiency as an invitation. It is all about the feeling of saved cost. If something costs less money, less time, less energy, it feels like less expensive. And so we use it more. Efficiency creates a positive self-image. I'm helping the climate. I'm working smarter. I get more things done. This lowers internal barriers and legitimizes increased consumption. And when something becomes more convenient, becomes more natural, and therefore more frequent, efficiency makes behaviors more attractive and lowers the inner price of action. The second mechanism is the economic mechanisms. Efficiency is not rewarded. Efficiency is consumed. So our economy is built on growth, not on reduction. Efficiency is fuel for expansion. Efficiency gains free economy resources. So it is used for more production and more markets, more features. Scale technology becomes mass market. It increases the total consumption, and there is no rewards for consuming less. Instead, higher efficiency triggers higher expectations. So efficiency becomes a resource, not a constraint. And this is a total normal human behavior. The capitalist economy is built on constant growth. Whether this is good or not is a totally different story. I very much believe in capitalism. I very much believe that we are built the way we are for a good reason, and that we behave in the way because we are built the way we are. And so for me, it's absolutely understandable and natural that we are living in a world of constant growth. And every activity that tried to change that failed in the past. So it seems to be natural. But, and this is the point I want to make here, we have to be aware that this effect is that we have this phenomenon here. So whenever you have a working process, whenever you can save something somewhere, keep in mind, do you compensate? Do you overcompensate? Or is there a way to get the benefits out of it, to have more time to consume less energy? Sorry. Maybe that is worth thinking about. And the third level, after the psychological and the economic mechanisms, is the technological mechanism. So complexity often grows faster than efficiency. Technology creates new spaces, and it immediately fills it. So efficient engines allow heavier cars with the same fuel or energy consumption. Faster processors enable more complex software structures. And efficient screens make huge displays available. It is possible to have these enormous amounts of screen real estate wherever we are, in cars, in our homes, in our offices, and we have all these huge screens, because it's cheaper. We could have small screens as we had them in the 80s and 90s, and they would cost almost nothing. But for the same money that cost a small display in the 80s and 90s, we get something like, I don't know, 3 27-inch displays onto our desks. And this is a typical example, again, of the rebound effect. And so we have this combination of psychological, economic, and technological mechanisms that stack up on each other. So whatever technology makes possible, that will feed our psychological part, the psychology in us. It is available, so we're going to use it. And it is cheap, so we're going to use it. So we have the economic mechanism as well. So the bigger screen doesn't cost more than the smaller one 20, 25, 30 years ago. And so we use it. And so they fuel each other, the three levels, and they speed up the rebound effect. What does it mean for HMI, human machine interface, UX, user experience? What does it mean to the design of technology? Well, what does it mean for people like me and maybe you that design technology? In my field of work, we often create the very conditions that make rebound effects possible. Easier interactions, more comfort, lower barriers. And what is meant to simplify can quickly turn into overuse, feature overload, cognitive burden, and new habits of dependency. And designers stand at a crossroad between making technology intuitive, easy to use, fast to use, fun to use, and preventing it from overwhelming the users. And the responsibilities we have as designers is we need to deliver more than usability. Does a feature really change users' behavior? Does it have any value? Is it really worth having it? So an old friend of mine who works at a sports car maker here in southern Germany, he said to me, if some marketing guys come and say, hey, we need this feature, and said, okay, you need to explain me with one sentence what it does and what the value behind it is. And if they cannot do it, we will not have it. Does a specific feature I implement into a technology increase safety? Or does it just increase interaction? Does a specific feature truly relieve the user? Or does it invite to perform unnecessary action? We need to understand the human as a whole. So user experience is anthropology. Yeah, ignoring psychology and habit will lead to strengthening the rebound effects. So we need to set boundaries where marketing does not set them. Yeah? So we need to say, as I just said, we need to say no to unnecessary features. We need to say no to excessive personalization. And we need to say no to interaction that do not belong into a vehicle. We talk about an in-car HMI. We need to prioritize safety and mental relief. And the key question in a car shall always be, does this reduce or increase the cognitive load of the driver? And to realize this, I have identified 6 strategies to design against the rebound effect. The first is intention over function. Design for purpose, not for possibility. Put real value into technology. Make clear that every feature, every single interaction that you have got needs to improve the life of the user. It needs to make it faster, easier, smarter, more focused, smoother. Maybe even just funnier, that's also okay. We can have this. But the intention is core and it needs to be over the function. Number two, orchestration over add-ons, over addition. Just adding stuff is easy in an HMI. It put another input device, add voice interaction, add gesture interaction, put on more layers of interaction to it, add more features. And this is easy. The hard thing is to orchestrate that, to make it a positive, smooth, easy, fun to use interface, to create an interaction that is full, that is humane, that is complete. And maybe less things, doing less things, having fewer menus is the better way. And definitely, we need to put on clearer priorities. Sixth strategy, treat attention as a scarce resource. So every interaction costs awareness, it costs focus, it costs mental energy. And particularly while driving, because driving is and will be in the next time, in the foreseeable time frame, the main task of the person behind the steering wheel. And so we have small resources that are left over for the interaction with an ADAS system, with a navigation system, with an infotainment system, whatever you have on screens, in cars, whatever you have on the different interaction devices in a car. And to be aware that you have only a limited amount of cognitive resources, of attention available for this interaction. This is core, and I experienced that when I was at a client a couple of years ago, and I asked this guy, hey, would you be able to use this while driving? Because this specific person created a very complex HMI, and he said, I don't have a driving license, I don't drive. Then I suddenly realized, okay, this person is not aware on how much cognitive demand is in driving, how much it costs to focus on the most important things there. Yeah, and so treat attention as a scarce resource is a core. Strategy number four, and this sounds a little counterproductive, it is introduce friction by design. Friction by design means that you, for example, block certain functions in an HMI. In the years 99, 2000, 2001, suddenly TV appeared on vehicle dashboards. It was suddenly possible to, there was a TV tuner in there and you could use this. And the first thing people did was watching TV while driving. And so suddenly regulation came up, and I think it's a good regulation saying, okay, this is blocked. And this is a very obvious example what friction by design means. So by design, by the design of the car, it's not possible to do this. So friction protects in this way. It is in this case. It protects the user from misusing the device. Yeah, maybe you can even think about slowing down certain processes while driving so it gets hard to do things and so people may not do this. This is what I mean with friction by design. Strategy number five, convert efficiency into relief. And this is grabbing right into the core of the rebound effect. And make freed up time empty again. Do not fill it with new features and other things people can do in the cars. And because whatever is possible, people will do this. And if you are able, because you have a very efficient, very good, nicely designed human-machine interface on your car, people will be fast, efficient, it will cost them low amounts of cognitive resources. And the gain you get out of this, and then this is the responsibility we have as HMI designers, to create empty time, empty spaces, empty rooms to create relief. And number six, and this should be natural, but I mentioned this here, cultivate a technology with respect philosophy. Yeah, technology should adapt to humans and not the other way around. Very often we have that a human needs to adapt to technologies. That starts when you have to read a manual, when you have to get through a manual. This is when you have to get a training on a new technology that you have. So then it's not natural. Then every training for a technology tries to adapt you to a technology instead of making it easier to use. And I'm discussing this very often. There are these big software packages that steer entire companies. And then you have tons of training to just do the very, very simplest things. And I know why this is, because there are companies out there that make a lot of money by explaining you a certain technology, a certain software package, a certain process steering software. And they make money with this. And this is why technology is so complex. And that's why they adapt you to the technology instead of vice versa, thinking about how can I make it so easy to use that with a certain amount of background in technology, I can just use this certain software. Responsibility means having the courage to leave things out. And if you take one sentence away out of this to today, out of this podcast episode today, this is the sentence. Responsibility means having the courage to leave things out. As an HMI, user experience designer, we influence whether efficiency becomes a relief or it becomes the next cycle of the rebound effect. Our job is not just to make things usable. Our job is to make things meaningful. Sometimes that means adding less. Often it means saying no. And always, that means putting the human above the technology. All right, couple of final thoughts. If we're honest, the problem isn't the technology. It's not the engines, not the motors, not the displays, not the algorithms. The problem is us. And our reflex to turn us as humans, and our reflex to turn every efficiency into a gain and to add more speed, more comforts, more features, more distraction. We optimize ourselves to death while believing we are creating progress. In reality, we're just building bigger machines to make the same mistakes more elegantly. The rebound effect isn't the law of nature. It's a choice. It's our choice. We are the humans. We have control about ourselves. And because it is our choice, we can stop it by treating efficiency not as an invitation, but as a responsibility for a reduction, for clarity, for conscious design. And not every improvement is progress. Sometimes true progress is what we leave out. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.